each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey everybody, and welcome. Nick, how are you doing? I didn't even acknowledge Nick. I came in the studio and didn't even, poor guy, you're doing fine. No orange hat, so that means Halloween is gone.
It's over.
Oh, he still got it. Oh, he's got a for Thanksgiving. Perfect. I like that. What do they call that?
Beret?
No, not a beret. What do they call that?
Fedora. Fedora.
Anyway.
Indiana Jones hat.
Indiana Jones.
He wears it well.
He does. And Nick wears it well, too. Mm-hmm. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm fine.
Good. Well, are you happy? Don't worry. Be happy. We could talk a little bit about happiness, maybe. I don't know what we're going to talk about. That's a good question. And I was told not to come on the radio today because I've got my sinuses. I'm congested. Yeah, I don't know if you can hear it in the voice, but so we have to begin always talking about who we are, where we are, what we're feeling. That's the only way to get through it.
It's life.
That's exactly what it is. This is my letter day. I do the letter. You know, so what happens is I come out of the weekend, and the weekend, of course, is, for me, it's nonstop. It's very busy. And now, this is maybe a broken record, and here he goes again, you know, but I have to say this because it helps me to help you to understand why I am the way I am, okay?
And to relieve the stress
exactly,
like we were talking about.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So I realize I don't know how to rest. I just don't know how to rest. And so when I leave the parish, let's say I get on a plane if I'm going to Rome or anywhere, even now when I go to Rochester, and I was there last week, but where the hospital is, because
right.
I'm still going through this treatment and I'm not talking about myself or my health, everything is okay. It's just something you got to do, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but I find that, you know, getting away for those few days has become for me almost a retreat. You know, look at it that way, because I was telling somebody this morning that if I were here doing everything, and you know, I say I'm under clinical trial, so I'm like a guinea pig, really. They're trying to figure out how all this stuff works, this new therapy or this whatever. So, you know, and so they can't tell you anything because they don't know. We're just going to watch from one appointment to the next, you know, what's going on, what's happening and all that. But but if I were doing that here, I can't be here and rest. So I live where I work. And so anyway, the point I'm trying to make is, so I get through the weekend and the weekend is nonstop. And I love the work. I don't even call it work. You know, It's for me life. It's right. Life. It's life-giving. It's my day. At the end of the day, I feel satisfied because I know that if I didn't do so well, God has a way of making up for what is lacking in my life, and there's a lot that's lacking. So, but by the time Monday comes now, I'm completely drained.
That's not a good sign.
No, it's not. And so, you know, I can't think. I don't want to think because my work is thinking all the time. I'm preparing all the time. And so Monday comes and I'm here. As long as I'm here, I see all these things that I should do, that I must do. but that I can't do because mentally and physically I'm not able to. My body is saying, you know what? This is your Sabbath. This is your day of rest, right? But I don't know how to rest as long as I'm here. Now, if I leave, that would be the horse of a different color. So I end up spending the whole day, like yesterday, with this anxiety over what I'm not doing, rather than just say, you know, just put it aside, shut the door, close your office, you know, because even being there, I can sit at my desk and not do anything. Or I know I've got to get a letter done, which I end up doing on Tuesday, but I want to get it done on Monday so that I'm not, because I also know that, you know, we do radio on Tuesday. And, you know, so you spend the whole day trying, you're agonizing over something you just can't do. It's like having a mental block, you know. But anyway, so here we are, unprepared as always, but not unprepared because I'm always preparing, I think, because I'm always thinking, always reflecting. So I have to ask you, and this is kind of a fun thing, at least it was for me. I mentioned on Sunday at the Mass, now I really, so people don't get the wrong impression that I'm just talking about movies, but I bring it into the gospel, the scripture, the theme for the Sunday, which is really really quite beautiful. The question, you know, are you ready? Are you ready when the Lord comes at the end of time or at the end of our lives? Are we ready? Because it was the gospel, the ten virgins, five wise and five foolish. Five had their lamps burning. They had the kerosene. The other five, because they were lazy, they didn't have kerosene. And so when the bridegroom came, they had gone out to buy. The announcement is made that the bridegroom is coming. This is a parable. Jesus, of course, is a bridegroom. And so the wise virgins were ready. Their lamps were burning. The light was burning. The other five, the foolish ones, the lazy ones, they said, you know, give us some of your oil, you know. And they said, well, if we give it to you, we're not going to have enough. So you have to go buy for yourselves. And so they went out and they bought. But when they came back, it was too late. He had already come. And the door was locked. It was interesting. They're knocking on the door, and he says, "I don't know who you are. I don't know who you are." They weren't prepared, you know. So we can talk about that. But where was I going with this? Oh, about this movie.
Movie,
so,
right?
Yeah. So anyway, when I was in Rochester last week, these headphones are coming off my head. When I was in Rochester last week, I saw a movie. So now I used to stay in a convent. Now the sisters are gone, and so I stay at this hotel that's attached to the hospital, which is really very convenient because in between appointments, I can go to my room or I can go to the Starbucks or I can go get something to eat or go for a walk or whatever, and I'm in close proximity, and then I can go for the next appointment. Whereas before, I had to wait all day. You know, wait it out.
Sit and wait.
And it's an all-day thing because there's a series of appointments. You got a blood draw. Then you got to give it time for them to study the blood. Then you meet with the doctor, and then
and if they need a little more, you have to go give them a little more.
And that's right. That's happened too. And then of course you got to wait for the treatment and all that. So it's a full day of waiting. Appointments and waiting. So now that I'm in this hotel, I've got access to the television, and so they have these old movies and all that. And so it was in between appointments that I went to that movie channel, old movies, which are really so nice, you know.
Yeah.
And this isn't really, I don't know if it's how old this movie is, but I was just mesmerized. I got in about halfway into the movie, and as I watched, I finished it to the end. And I thought, boy, I can't wait to tell the students, our school students, because they said, this is a fantastic movie. They need to see this. And so at the children's mass on Friday, and it was a good, because I was going to bring it into the message about, you know, to win. We have to help each other win. We have to help each other to gain salvation. But anyway, we had worked together as a team, in other words. And so this movie was great. So I said, you know, oh, I saw this movie. And I didn't intend to speak about it until I was speaking to them. I thought, wow, this just came to my mind. I says, I got to tell you, my gosh, this was a great movie. I wish you could see it. I don't know the name of the movie, but I said, you know, I saw it. I got into the movie, and at the time I turned it on, there's a group of young kids, probably about 9 years old, eight or nine, seven, mm-hmm. eight or nine, I don't know. And the one kid had just hit a home run. They were playing baseball. He hit a home run. It went over the fence into this yard where there's this monster of a dog. And they had to then try to figure out how to retrieve the ball because the baseball was signed by Babe Ruth, mm-hmm. belonged to the father. The kid had taken it from the home. But anyway, so I was trying to tell a little bit of the story, and thinking these kids had never heard about it, but I started seeing them. They really perked up, you know,
right.
And the teachers as well, and the principal too. And because I'm saying, I don't know the name of this movie, but I saw it. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You got to see it. And starting to describe it, but I wanted to get into the whole story and all mm-hmm. that. But I saw this one girl kind of in the front. She really kind of lit up, and she's kind of nodding her head, and right. she wanted to tell me all it was. And so I said, "What you saw the movie? Obviously, what?" She's Sandlot. It's right. called Sandlot. So at that point, I think at some point I said, "How many of you have seen the movie?" And everybody saw it.
It's funny when
had you seen it?
Well, when you were describing it, I knew of it. I don't think I've, because I used to work in a video store, so I would see
sure,
parts
yeah.
and parts of all kinds of movies.
Sure.
But I have a unique ability. If you tell me a little something about it, I know what it is. And when you were saying, I was smiling because I was getting, before you even said the.
Sure.
And yeah, I've you seen parts it. Of it, so I know, yeah.
You didn't see the whole movie?
I didn't
though.
see, I saw a good part of it to know what was going on, but
yeah.
I didn't see the whole thing.
How'd you like it?
It was good.
Why didn't you see it? I think I'd, especially if you're working in a video store, you'd probably.
For me, we'd put it on and it'd play, but, you know, I was working, so it's, you know, I couldn't sit there
that.
And watch the whole movie, but I would see the beginning. Sometimes I would see the end. Sometimes I would see the middle.
Hey, that's something of the past, isn't it, already? Video stores.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's.
Would you work for Blockbuster? Or?
Before that, I worked for a place called Arrows before it became Blockbuster. So later on, Blockbuster bought them all out.
So you go way back.
Yeah, you go way back.
Because I think Blockbuster has been gone for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the way, well, yeah, a few years, but Blockbuster used to be a real big, where it was the big store. And then later on, they went into, you know, it got smaller and smaller and smaller.
So you're probably, you were probably working when they had the VHS or whatever,
yeah,
right? Those
actually,
big tapes.
I loved VHS.
Oh, is that something? How
I
times
still
have
changed.
VHS. In our short life, how things have changed. No, it was a great movie because mm-hmm. it just, and I mean, really, that takes me back to when mm-hmm. I was a child. And it's, you know, we can't go back. We've got to go back, but we can't go back. We've got to somehow recover the innocence mm-hmm. and the adventure, the sheer joy of being a child and in a sense role playing and right. and learning teamwork and
some of those movies were really good for that. You almost date yourself by if you know you think about the years that go by.
Sure,
what you see now. And I was just going to say, at one time, you know, there was no cable and things like that.
Really?
Now there's channels like family channels that show these movies all the time.
Sure.
Or, you know, different movies like that. So if you didn't really see it in a video store, you saw it, you can see it on, you know, on video. And now it's all streaming. A lot of the stuff you can get streaming now. So it's like.
So these, yeah, that's, so what's interesting.
People don't know about them unless you remember these things.
Right. So when you see, you know, when you're talking to these children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even as old as the eighth grade, but even high school students,
yeah.
their upbringing was quite radically different from yeah. from mine
Very
and
different.
From yours. You know, because we're not that far apart
mm-hmm.
in age, but it's hard to imagine. And I was telling at one of the masses, I think at the Spanish mass, because sometimes during the you know every mass. It's a little different. I mean, mm-hmm. basically the same theme, and you're trying to make a point. And But you get different people, you're speaking in different ways. And other things kind of come into my mind. As I say so often, I'm not an organized thinker. But a lot of stuff, I'm constantly thinking, and somehow it all comes together. But the, I said quite pointedly at the 11:30 Mass, I said, you know what scares me the most, what most frightens me? And of course, you know, people, they perk up because they want to know, you know, right. Because they're dealing with their own stuff. Everybody's kind of working out their own lives in one way or the other. And I said, what frightens me the most, you know, what frightens me the most, you know, so I asked a question and then I answered the question, is technology. Technology, as good as it is, I mean, it's a great good. We've talked about it many times here, I think, but there's also that very dark side of technology. And unfortunately, you know, I tire of seeing people constantly on the phone.
Yeah.
I do not carry a phone with me. I've mentioned that before. I don't even check my phone often. There may be days before I even check, and I need to do that because, you know, even if there was an emergency, because not many people have my cell phone number, because I just don't give it out. But people know where I work, they know where I live, and so
know how to get in contact.
Exactly. So if there's a, Christina, via Christina, I get a lot of my information if there's something really. I can't be bound to that. I just can't. I refuse. The computer is as good as it is, and you know we right. can access so much information. There's a great, great good in all this technology, but when I see the little, when I see the children, I mean the little tiny children, all the young people, it's as if they have no identity apart from
the phone,
those gadgets, and that frightens me.
It's interesting because I remember when. And I can say this because I'm dating myself, when everybody had a phone. At one time, people didn't have little phones, but then when it became people had phones, I would always get aggravated when somebody was talking to me and then they would take a call or they would just be on the phone and they would totally ignore you
sure.
in mid-speech.
Sure.
But now it's even worse because the kids technically aren't on the phones talking. But they're texting.
They're
getting
yeah.
the information that's coming through via, you know, the internet, whatever they're looking up. And it's the same thing. It's not paying attention like we're doing now. It's a conversation. Conversations are gone. It's just you're thinking about that phone. You're thinking about, well, did somebody just text me? You're aggravated because the phone is there and you're wondering, you know, did I get a message? Is somebody calling me? What's going on right now?
Yeah, you're not the priority. You know, I've been in situations like that, and I mean, I'm not faulting anybody.
Nope.
This is just what's become of our society.
But observation too is, and I used to get really mad at this, but now I don't because I see the effect of the phone itself. I mean, there's moments too. I don't have a watch anymore, and I used to have a watch to know what time it is. And I find myself looking at the phone every few minutes to see, okay, well, what time is it?
Sure.
Is it time to go to work? How much time do I have? And in reality, it never was that. I don't remember phone numbers anymore. I'm at the mercy of that phone.
Sure.
If that phone should get stolen or disappear, I'm lost.
Yeah, now that's interesting, too, because when I was in the, this idea of not remembering phone numbers, because you've got automatic, you just pull
the
up
name,
the name and
then
push
you
a button and all that, and that's true. But gosh, going back in the day when we didn't have this stuff, and I remember, and this is really what happened to me. You know, I was this is when I was in Rochester right after I had the surgery, and I was at the time dealing with the prognosis that I had a 5% chance of surviving. So you know, I had to kind of very quickly deal with reality, right? You know that. Death is imminent, and my days are numbered, and how could this be? I'm so young, you know, and I've got so much to do. And, you know, I mean, those were things that were, you know, it was a kind of reality that I didn't want to have to deal with, but I was forced to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate it now as I look back, because, you know, every day is a gift. Every day is a very precious gift. And I'll tell you, these things really, really help you to appreciate.
They do.
And as we get older, you know, and I'm, you know, certainly getting up there.
I'm starting to feel that way too.
Yeah. Well, your body tells you, you know, so. But what was interesting, during that time, now this is what, and I have to say, I almost think back a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. and I'm almost embarrassed, if I can say, that I was so so sensitive,
right?
So you know, really grasping at so many things. You know, we got to take a break. We'll come back. I want to. Maybe this is what we'll talk about. And didn't have any. But don't let me okay. lose my train of thought. You know, I do that.
Yeah.
So easily.
You're getting old.
I'm getting old. Exactly. But so grasping. Right. Okay. At something, and this feeling a little bit now, like, wow, the lack of grace I had, mm-hmm. but at the same time, was it not grace acting, God's grace really moving through my life, in a sense? But anyway, we'll be right back. We'll take a break. I am Father Anthony, and you're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. We'll be right back.
Join us for a special 150th Jubilee celebration of the Feast of St. Stanislaus Kostka with a solemn Latin Tridentine Mass on Saturday, November 18th at 5 p.m. This will be the first Tridentine Mass at St. Stanislaus Kostka in over 50 years. Come for this historic celebration. A first-class relic of St. Stanislaus Kostka will be available for veneration. A plenary indulgence can be gained. A festive food reception will follow in the school, where Father Charles will explain aspects of the Tridentine Mass. Join us Saturday, November 18th at 5 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. This Thursday, Father Anthony talks with the celebrant for this Saturday's Tridentine Mass, Father Charles Finelli, along with Scott and Emil on Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. So anyway, to pick up where we left off, I was, and this goes back to the phone, so I somehow, this is a conversation.
It's the way it
goes.
We're
friends, you know, we're friends.
This is how it
is. So I'm not preaching here, I'm just, we're talking about life, you know, life. But it all goes back to God, and I tell you, I say it so often, but I can't imagine how people go through life without giving God any kind of serious thought, because He is really the basis of my life, the mystery that He is, that God is. And I love that mystery, because I find such great freedom in that. You know, it's like life is an adventure. And I guess that goes back to being a child. We had that sense of adventure. We role played, we would make believe. And all this was a preparation for life. Thank God I didn't have, you know, all this stuff, you know, that we have now. Gosh, and even television, you only had two or three channels.
Yeah. So, I miss those days.
I do, too. I do, too. But we can't go back, you know. But anyway, so when I was, after I'd had major surgery, and I was, you know, I'd been told that I have, you know, your four-stage cancer, and I had this prognosis of a 5% chance of surviving that was told to me. And so for a month, a solid month, I had to live with that. And as I said, it was, and I'm happy about that because it was, in some ways, a life-changing experience for me. And as I said, it makes me appreciate each day as a gift. And you just don't take for granted, you know, that I'm going to be here in 6 months or in a year and 5 years or whatever. You just don't know. Nobody knows for sure. We don't know the day nor the hour. That was the last sentence of the gospel on Sunday, the parable of the 10 virgins, but that we should be ready at all times because we don't know the day nor the hour, but that day and that hour is coming. That we know, and we should, as the saints said so wisely, keep this before you, keep death before you, and you'll live a holy life. And by holy life, we're not talking about, as I say so often, about flying high, but it's, well, let me just say, you know, I tell you this, what I mentioned to the people, and this saint, and I don't remember the name of the saint, and something tells me I mentioned this last week as well. I'll tell you, I'm so repetitious, but you got to hear something 7 times before you remember it.
For me, a lot more than that.
And me too, that's exactly right. So this saint, he was playing cards, maybe in a monastery or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't remember. But let's say he was in a monastery. He was. They were playing cards, the brothers, the monks. And they all knew him to be a very holy man, a very saintly man. And in the conversation, they brought up the question, or they asked him, you know, Brother John, let's just say his name is Brother John. What if you knew that Jesus was coming, that your life would come to its definitive end within the next hour or at any moment now? You know that in other words, the Lord is knocking on the door. What would you do? What would you do? And his response was very interesting. He says, I just continue to do what I'm doing, you know, playing cards. And what it does is it gives you insight into the state of his soul, that if we're disposed and receptive, you know, where life isn't, holy life isn't just, you know, on your knees in prayer. That's part of it. No, there's no doubt. It's where we keep grounded, we nurture our relationship with God, which is another thing I'd like to talk about too, is a relationship. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? There's all these things going through my mind. But it's just something to think about, you know. What does it mean? Do you have a relationship with God? How would we define that relationship? But anyway, to get back to me, my story. So I'm sitting there having to deal with this reality now that seems surreal, that basically, you know, I'm dying. That's how I thought, I felt. I'm dying. My days are numbered. This is my time. And I begin to, as I said before the break, begin to grasp. I was long, and you got to understand, I was uprooted, like Abraham. Like I was reading something about Abraham being uprooted, and this is part of the spiritual journey. And I literally I was uprooted, taken from here, from my parish, pastorate, from everything that I knew, everything that I was doing, and I was taken to this God-forsaken place, Rochester. Lack of respect when I say that, but I mean, when under those conditions, it was a God-forsaken place. Right. It was just basically Rochester is a big hospital, and that's it. You know, it wasn't until later that I began to see how beautiful the terrain, the landscape was around the city. It's like a big suburb, the city. I don't like it, but But it's all, everything is centered around the hospital. And then you go out just 7 minutes drive away and you see these beautiful rolling hills and the farms and all that. It's very, very beautiful, the cattle and the, all that stuff, the corn. But anyway, so during that time, you know, what do you do? And I found myself, you know, having been uprooted away from everybody that I that was familiar to me. There was just a, you know, Oscar was there. By God's providence, he happened to be living in Rochester at the time. And he was very active and very involved in the parish and in the studio and all that. And I was introduced to these nuns who took me into their convent, which was a very beautiful thing, but it's not where I wanted to be.
And then he was very nice to prepare you by taking you to the cemetery at nighttime.
Exactly right. That was the night before the surgery, exactly.
Right.
You know, in the dark of night, you know,
exactly.
Before I'm going on a major surgery. It was a Holy Thursday. We were getting ready for Good Friday, major surgery, two surgeons. You know, so it was kind of, that was surreal as well.
Right.
But anyway, after the surgery and after I left the hospital and, you know, it was, I heard for the first time that, you know, you've got four-stage cancer. They kept telling me, I didn't hear it. I did not hear it. But as I was leaving the hospital, very happy to get out of the hospital.
Right.
And as I was leaving, just an hour before I left, one of the doctors, you know, said, okay, so yours is, you got four-stage cancer. Oh, I said, what? I said, what do you mean? The doctors, the surgeons came out, they said, we took everything out. We took, you know, we took this out. We took that out. I said, what do you mean? You know, I'm thinking that I'm completely clean. They knew I was going to have to go through some chemotherapy and all that, but... you're telling me now I got four-stage cancer. And then I had to, you know what I did? I had to stay there in that bed. I said, I just got to process this. I said, nobody told me that. He says, no, we told you. And so everybody that came in, I says, nobody told me. And he says, no, we told you. We told you. You knew that. I didn't know. I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
I didn't hear it. It's amazing. So leaving, leaving the hospital was I was in this
fog,
real
that's
fog,
correct.
And I was angry, not at the prognosis. Mm-hmm. I was angry at everybody around me because I wanted to go home.
Right.
I didn't want to be there. I said, okay, so I want to go home. I want to go to Chicago. I want to go to Florida. I want to be with my family. Mm-hmm. I want to be with my parishioners. I didn't know what to do. And here I'm going to this strange convent and the nuns who I really didn't know at that time. And I was really, it was just unbelievable. I'm grasping. I absolutely have a need to reconnect with my childhood, my friends who were school friends,
right.
And we were Air Force people, so we were moving around a lot. But I guess the friends that made an impression on me were the kids that I went to grade school with for a few years when I was in Florida, and that happened to be where the family is now. We had eventually moved back there after my father retired from the Air Force. So I needed all of a sudden to reconnect to these kids, these kids. That's why this movie was so was so important to me, so beautiful. But I really, this is what I needed. I needed to go back. I needed to talk to them. I needed to be with them. It was kind of like I had to go back to that time before I was a student, before I was a priest, a university student, before I was a priest. I had to go back to that time of innocence, that time before, that time when you could make believe and you could... life was an adventure, and you know, it as I'm talking, I'm thinking about that. And so what happened was, all of a sudden, a very specific friend came to my mind. Now we're going into high school, and I said, I got to talk to her. Her name was Debbie, and we were very, very good friends, and we were very active in the school. Mm-hmm. I was the president of the senior council, the senior class, and she was the vice president. And it was a really fun time. High school was very fun for me. It was really a nice time. And I needed to connect with many, but she came to mind. I said, I just got to talk to her. I got to talk to her. And do you know, now I haven't called her at her family home in 40 years. Imagine that. Never even thought of that. Do you know, I'm laying there in bed thinking I need to talk to her. Mm-hmm. And immediately her phone number came into my mind.
There you go.
And I thought, is that the number? You know, I don't, and so I quickly got up. It was, I wrote it down so I didn't want to forget. And I dialed the telephone number, and her mother answered the phone just as if I was there 40 years ago in high school. And I said, is Debbie there?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, she recognized my voice. You know, it was amazing. It was like nothing had changed.
Wow.
And she said, oh, I'm here preparing food for the family. Mm-hmm. And she was always preparing food for the family, you know? So it was like being back, and we would, in high school, we would go over there, and she was always preparing food. Mm-hmm. And we were all Catholics as well. So even out of high school, we were all very active. And she had gone to actually had joined a convent, was going to be a nun, but she didn't stay. She was there for maybe 8 years or something. But so she happened, as I'm on the phone, she steps to the door.
Wow.
And it was just the most interesting thing. But phone numbers, I mean, it's not, you know, today, but I remembered that phone number came to my mind because I used to call her a lot.
There you go.
You know, as a kid. But this need to reconnect, to go back to this time of innocence, and it was just kind of remembering what life was before. The reality all of a sudden was hitting me that my life was coming to an end, and it was really wanting to reconnect with these people I remember in a time of innocence, a time before I had an identity as a priest, that I, before I was father, before I was an adult. But, you know, when I was young and taken care of, you know, our parents took care of us.
Exactly.
We didn't worry about anything. They provided for us. They took care of us. We had the freedom to have fun, to have adventure. Just like in that movie Sandlot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was so beautiful. And I wonder, you know, do the kids do these things? And I think we bring this up every so often. And I know you can't go back, but we had and I told the kids, you know, I said our bicycles. I think I mentioned that. Our bicycles were our horses. They were the army tank. They were we played cowboys and Indians and all that was, you know, it was all part of it. We street games, yard games. You know, sleepovers, we would go on hikes, you know, camping.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the Boy Scouts and the baseball. We were, and Sunday we would prepare our cassocks and our surplice, you know, to serve Mass at the altar. You know, it was a different kind of a time, a very different kind of a time. And, but you know what, Tony, how many of the students came up to me and said, oh, yeah, that's my favorite movie.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And even the servers, after we got into the sacristy, says, did you guys see the movie? Because, of course, when I was talking to the kids, I'm looking at the servers, altar servers are in the back. And every one of them, oh, yeah, it's one of my favorite movies, you know, and they see it over and over and over again. And I wish I had lived in a time like that, they said, you know. It's interesting, isn't it?
It is amazing, too. It's that one movie or a few movies that always, like, take you back. And I guess when you look at it, that's kind of what movies are supposed to do. But then you think, okay, well, what is some of the stuff that we see today?
Sure.
So it's a contrast.
That's what I think of what the kids what the children are exposed to. They are exposed to things that we never were exposed to.
Right.
And you know, I mean, you got to know that with the cell phones, what is it, the smartphone, or where you've got your computer on your phones and all that, you know they've got access to some really dark
stuff. And that's the thing. You can get anything at that point. You know, it's like one time, even like when you think of the things we used to do in school, like look for reports or look for information. There was a library. There was encyclopedias.
Sure.
That's gone. I mean, everything is
amazing.
Now
you know, yeah, exactly. Internet. You think about that. You had to spend time.
Yeah.
Everything took time. You know, I mentioned Did I mention at the mass? People are going to think I'm just talking about this at the mass, but no, it was making a point, right? But I did mention, you know, at one point, the kind of sensitivity we had again, this age of innocence, a kind of sensitivity, so that even that those tags on the mattresses, they said, I forgot what they said, but by against the law to remove this this tag, you remember that. And as kids, we would never. I would not even go near it, you know, because I felt like, you know, I would accidentally tear it, and then we would be we'd be in, you know, we'd be in jail or something like that. But I mentioned to the kids, you know, because I was also trying to teach them, you know, show them, you know, that we you know, do we respect our parents? Do we respect our teachers? Do we understand that we represent our families, that we set an example for good or for bad that's going to reflect on the family, reflect on the church, reflect on our faith? And I mentioned when I was my father was very active in the school. So he was in charge of the carnival, and he knew the principal, he knew the teachers. And there were eight of us, and so his eyes were always on. We knew that he knew where we were. He was always watching us, and Mom and Dad. But my dad was kind of very proactive in, you know, sports and scouting and all that. In fact, my parents were both scout leaders. My mother was the den leader of the Cub Scouts. My father was the chief, you know, of the tribe or the scouts, you know. So they were very involved. They were very active in the baseball. My father would have us out there. Speaking of baseball, these kids, you know, playing baseball. Yeah. And I wasn't, you know, an avid baseball player as my brothers were, but I was involved, active. And I wasn't considered the athlete. They were really, really the athletes of the family. I was the older one, so I was kind of caring for the kids. And my mother had, you know, I was helping with the littler ones. But I still had fun. I mean, I was more of the adventurous, you know, not so much sports a little bit, but more, you know, playing, pretending I was in the army or I was a cowboy or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. We had so much fun. It was such a good time, so much adventure. And, but I mentioned, you know, so my father had gone to Vietnam and in those days, because, gosh, I don't even know if they have chalkboards today, because our kids have computer things in their classrooms, these big computer screens.
I think about that, too. I haven't been in school for the longest. I wonder if that's even around
anymore. Hey, can you know, boy, we're getting old. So things have really changed. But we used to, you know, you remember you used to go to the chalkboard, and you'd have to do your math problems, and then the teacher would come around and see if you did it correct, and everybody's looking and everybody's watching, and, you know, you have to write your name next to your math problems. So I don't know. There's not really a clown in me, but I guess I was clowning around, and
it's always that one guy.
You know. So I did my problem on the board, and I wrote my name in these huge letters, like, you know, big A, a big N, a big T. I took up half the board just with my name.
Right.
You know? And the teacher didn't like it at all. Oh, because we had a that's right. It was a substitute teacher. Mrs. Partlow, I remember her, and she was a nurse. She also was a nurse, worked with my mother in the hospital later. I always wondered if she remembered that, but many years later. But anyway, so she put me out in the hallway as punishment, and so I was there, and who comes down the corridor? Who's coming down the hallway with the principal, Mr. Rogers? His name was Mr. Rogers, and I felt so bad because I knew he knew my father. See, that was the thing. Because the principal, the substitute teacher didn't know my dad. All the other teachers did. The principal did. And I was probably acting out of character. Maybe I wasn't acting out of character. Maybe I was.
No, I think you were in character.
In character. So he came and he says, "What are you doing out here?" And then I'm trying to make up. You know, you think he's not going to ask the teacher, you know, so I'm trying to think of some kind of lame excuse as to why I'm here in the hallway.
I just needed some fresh air.
I needed fresh air. I needed some rest. And he says, you know, I'll tell you, he says, buddy, you know, when they call you buddy,
no, you're in trouble. Good.
He says, I'm writing a letter to your father. I'm going to write a letter to your father. My father was in Vietnam.
Right.
And I felt so bad. And he probably never wrote the letter, but I lived the rest of that year
thinking
that he had written the letter. My father was very completely disappointed in me. In fact, my mother did that once. So I guess I was, you know, because she wrote a letter to my father that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. I'm doing everything I can do, Mom. You know, I'm trying to be the man of the house. My father left me to be the man of the house. And she was upset with me about something. And she said, I wrote your father and told you. Or I told him, you know, could you do something to straighten this guy out? Well, I remember, you know, my mom took us to the doctor once. Because she had eight kids. I mean, my God, I don't see how she did it. She had eight kids. So I was 10 years old. So everybody else was, my one sister was 11. The rest were all younger.
Oh.
And my father left me to be the man of the house, you know. Right. And I took that very serious. And so I tried to do the best I could. And my mother felt like she didn't have control of all of us, you know. Although she did, but she didn't think she did. And so she took us to the doctor, you know, Dr. Bell. I remember that, Dr. Bell. I'm taking you. I'm going to have him talk to you. Just like, you know, if there's a problem in the school, we're going to bring Father over here, and he's going to talk to the students.
Give you a good talking, too.
So she took us all to the doctor, to Dr. Bell, at her doctor. And we all sat there, and then she said, and he's the problem. And he's the problem, you know, pointing to me.
Isn't that not much different to today?
Exactly.
People always say, you're
the problem. I felt so bad, you know. And my father did write me a letter and told me, you know, that I need to ship up or, he didn't say shape up, you know, he said ship up or ship out, whatever it was. No, he said how disappointed he was. It was really one of those, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, you know?
That's why I've lived my life. But, you know, you think about this and people will tell you, oh, that was undue pressure put on you, you know, to this fact. But the fact that you really, you felt you wanted to be that man. You wanted to be that person that was in charge because it's your father had faith in you and you didn't want to disappoint him.
Exactly.
Today, I think it's the total opposite of that.
I wonder.
And I think that's why things are bad. And people might say, oh, well, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. And you can say that. It's not a problem. But I think the proof, you see it. If you wait long enough, just like, you know, when I think, and I hate to just mix things like this, but when you think about all this cell phone usage and how it affects people, nobody's looking at that now. But 5, 10, maybe 20 years down the line, I think you're going to see this. You're going to see that there's problems with this. And
well, there's already studies coming out.
Right.
I mean, this past week, and that was one of the things that kind of brought it to my attention as well, that even the founder of Facebook, is that Zuckerberg?
Zuckerberg,
yeah. Somebody who worked. Anyway, they knew the impact, the kind of bondage this would be on people.
And see, that is scary in itself. And I don't know how people could then look at this Facebook, which, again, there's good and bad in everything if people use it the right way. But I think most people, if you look at it, don't use something in a responsible way. So I don't know how can people still, after hearing information like that, don't recognize that maybe this could be a problem.
Because it's addictive.
It's
addictive. It is a bondage.
Yeah.
Even in speaking to our students, we were talking about that the other day, that I was in the classroom about how, you know, it's, you know, when we talk about fasting, it's really we have to fast from these gadgets. So we got to take a break. On an up note, I want to tell you, don't let me forget about this this wedding that I had, or a wedding anniversary I had on Saturday. Okay, we'll do that, and then we'll just kind of figure out the, you know, what does it say? We got to create the space. We got to create, for what? For God? For what reason? For what purpose? But that we're ready. But that we're ready. We got to, you know, we've got to open ourselves, nurture life in God. Anyway, we'll be right back. We'll go somewhere with it. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. We'll be right back.
Join us for a special 150th Jubilee celebration of the Feast of St. Stanislaus Kostka with a solemn Latin Tridentine Mass on Saturday, November 18th at 5 p.m.
This will be the first Tridentine Mass at St. Stanislaus Kostka in over 50 years. Come for this historic celebration. A first-class relic of St. Stanislaus Kostka will be available for veneration. A plenary indulgence can be gained. A festive food reception will follow in the school, where Father Charles will explain aspects of the Tridentine Mass. Join us Saturday, November 18th at 5 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. This Thursday, Father Anthony talks with the celebrant for this Saturday's Tridentine Mass, Father Charles Finelli, along with Scott and Emile on Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, two blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. Boy, I'm glad I came on the radio, because somebody told me, a very good friend of mine, told me, she heard me on the phone this morning, and she said, actually, Gerilyn, who is, we're here because of her, and her mother's very, very, very sick. She's very, they actually built the studio, yeah. And so we want to pray for Rosemary, her mother, just a wonderful matriarch, the mother of eight children, and her husband died when many, many years ago, and so she helped. I mean, she didn't help. She did raise the family. She's got many grandchildren. I think starting to have great grandchildren and all that. But they're a beautiful family. And but I spoke with Geraldine this morning, Geraldine, asking about her mother, how she's doing, and she's holding on, but in a very weakened state. And Geraldine said, "Oh, you sound terrible." She says, "You're not going on the radio today." I says, "My God, I haven't been on the radio for." I was in Rochester last week, and she says, "No, you're not going. You're not going on the radio." I says, "Okay, thank you." And I, at that time, I said, "Thanks for giving me permission, because I really didn't feel. I mean, I couldn't hardly talk. I was so congested, sinuses, whatever. But I'm glad I was disobedient. I'm glad we came on, because this is. I hope it's been good. It's just good, because I feel this connection also to those who listen. We're kind of in this together, and so it is a conversation. You don't get a chance to talk, but I'm hoping. My hope is that you're kind of resonating with what we're saying. Yeah. And of course, you can write in anytime and ask questions. We got to start doing that. Questions or comments or whatever. We really don't get much feedback like that, but it would be nice so that we're all on the same page. Or if we're not on the same page, we get on the same page. Or maybe I need to get on a different page. I don't know. But I want to to bring this to conclusion. The children, obviously, the fact that this was one of their favorite movies. So many of these children just love it.
Sandlot. Did ask me.
Yeah.
At the end of the Mass. Oh, what movie was he talking about?
But it says that they too are longing. I always say adulthood is trying to go back to the innocence of childhood. And now it seems to me children want the innocence of what once was. Not that things were perfect, obviously not, nothing new under the sun, but it was a different time. I had to say, and the bottom line is, and this is how we conclude the show today, is that we've got to put the gadgets aside. And we got to create the space for God. And I had a 20th wedding anniversary on Saturday. Gloria and Lionel, Lionel and Gloria. I had their wedding 20 years ago, which is just a frightening thought to me, too, because, I mean, it's just, you know, they've got children that are older and all that now. Unbelievable. And, but they, I couldn't believe it. I don't know, sometimes until I'm going into the mass who I'm dealing, because mm-hmm. I just live from one thing to the next.
Right.
It's okay, this is Saturday, what do I have going on? I've got this and this and that and that. Okay, so, who are these people? I recognize the names, but then I see the face, oh, I remember, because a lot of people move up, they come back for funerals and for, in this case, a wedding anniversary, or for their children's quinceañeras, or for their children's marriages now, too. And this, the bride, mm-hmm. quote unquote, hadn't arrived yet. They came separately 20 years later. And, but Lionel was so happy. And he says, Father, he says, you know, we have had such a wonderful marriage. We have such a wonderful family. He said, we just couldn't, but, you know, have this celebration to thank God for all these years. And he says, I want you to know, he says, we never miss Mass on Sunday.
Wow.
He says, we know, we understand, we create that space. And so he says, we create that space. That time is given to God in gratitude, and we entrust to God every week, every day, but he says in a public way, they recognize the obligation, the discipline, the responsibility of observing the Sabbath, keeping faith, participating in the sacred worship of God in a public way. And he says we do it every Sunday. He said that is our, this is a time when we collectively as a family, we give this time to God. And he says, you know, I'm so proud of my children because I didn't have to, you know, they just get it. They get it. My son serves at the church. He's, you know, they, in fact, he did the reading. His son did one of the readings at the Mass. And you could see that they were, that this was a joy for them. It was a joy. But this is the thing that we've got to do. I mean, so how do we counteract all this stuff that's going on today? We have to create space. Mm-hmm. Why? I was just writing this morning, you know, in preparation for Thanksgiving Day, that God in His mercy, knowing that we have this inclination to disorder, He gives us the means to have ordered lives. He gives us the commandments, and one of those commandments is to keep holy the Sabbath. Not that we just fulfill the responsibility, but that we do come in gratitude to God for what God has done for us. God has given us life. God has saved us, redeemed us. We've been redeemed. We have meaning and purpose in life. We have a destiny. And we got to create the space to nurture that life in God. And it will impact, it will affect the whole of our lives. And so that this family came with that kind of faith and that kind of joy and that kind of peace. And it wasn't just them. It was generational because her parents were there. His parent, and you could see that this is a communal. It's a faith that is shared in a collective way, and I tell you, it makes a difference. And that in and of itself is how we return to that age of innocence. We can still have our gadgets, but we have to learn to separate, put them aside, create space for God, and that way we create space for each other. All right, everybody, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back, Father Coy's tomorrow, and then Thursday with Father Charles Finelli. Have a nice day. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao, ciao.